Llama al 91-133-5832 o entra en grupobaugan.com. ¿Do you Baugan?
Hemos escuchado el movimiento número 12 de John Tunes. Esta tarde tendrá lugar en el Auditorio Nacional una sinfonía del compositor Richard Higgins.
No te líes, lo mejorcito para aprender inglés lo tienes en Baugan. Tenemos una amplia variedad de cursos para todos los niveles, todos los horarios, todas las edades y todos los bolsillos. 91-133-5833 o grupobaugan.com.
¿Vas a dejar pasar el verano otra vez sin hacer nada con tu inglés? Vente a Baugan. Con nuestros Summer Impacts refrescarás tu inglés con los mejores profesores. Este verano, hazte un Summer Impacts, un curso intensivo con clases concentradísimas y muy, muy refrescantes. Summer Impacts. Más información en el 91-133-5833 o en grupobaugan.com.
Escucha. Descubre. Aprende. Esto es Baugan Radio.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Western Civilization. From Mesopotamia to Silicon Valley. I'm your host. My name is Guy Williams, and on this program, I'm going to begin with something linguistic. I'm going to talk about pronunciation, especially the pronunciation, well, from words, foreign words, words that don't come from English. Very few words actually come from English itself. We borrow words from everywhere. When we borrow words from Greek, and especially from ancient Greek, we have a special pronunciation for them. Now, if they end in E, if they end in the letter E, we pronounce that E like E. For example, talk about apostrophe. Yes. You can use a diacritical mark. You can use an apostrophe. If you have problems with granos, with pimples, this is called acne. The highest point you can reach is the acme with M, acme. Acme, a name often associated with companies, a company name, Acme. Okay, a part of a poem, that's a strophe. And a natural disaster is a catastrophe. Okay, do you understand where this is going? Apostrophe, catastrophe, acne. Okay. The seeds that are very common, seeds that are used in cooking, often toasted, sesame, Alibaba and the 40 thieves, the secret, the password, to open the cave of Alibaba was open sesame. Okay. Now, there are Greek goddesses whose names end in E. One of them, Psyche. Psyche, a little butterfly that was meant to represent el alma, the soul. Psyche, when people die, their psyche flies out of their mouths like a butterfly. Como una mariposa. That Psyche gave us, of course, psychology and every sort of derivative word, psychosis and everything psychological that comes from the Greek goddess Psyche. Phoebe, the goddess of the moon. Persephone, who was kidnapped, sequestrada, and taken to the underworld. And that is why we have winter, because of poor Persephone. Circe, the witch in The Odyssey, Circe, the goddess of love, born on the island of Cyprus, Chipre. Her name was Aphrodite. Okay. Do you know where this is going? The fact is that with all of these examples from Greek, we also do the same thing for words ending in E in Spanish. And so, adobe is called adobe. If you take an avocado and you mash the avocado, you make it into a kind of puree, that is the basis of guacamole. There is also the Mexican tamale. In Texas, they had to fight the Apache Indians, the Apaches. All right? A delicious, es como una lapa, pero muy, muy grande. This is called an abalone. We have it in California. It used to be illegal to eat because there were so few of them. It was an endangered species, but now it is abundant. I'm not sure you can eat it in California, but in any case, it's you can eat it in Hawaii. You can find them in Hawaii. They are called abalone. Of course, coyote is going to be coyote. A large knife used to cut, for example, in the jungle, or to cut sugar cane, that's going to be a machete. All right. With all of these things ending in E, now let's talk about the Greek goddess of victory. In Rome, she was called Victory. And if somebody won a sports contest, or really any sort of contest, any game, the winner is going to be crowned, going to be given the laurel crown or the olive crown or any sort of crown by the goddess Victory. Now, the equivalent goddess in ancient Greece was called Nike. Good. Nike. And Nike was the basis for the shoes, the sports shoes. N-E-K-E. Nike. Those are not called Nikes. Don't listen to anyone who calls them Nikes. There are English speakers who call them Nike. But it's because they don't recognize that it comes from Greece. They do not understand that Nike was a Greek goddess. They don't recognize the name, and so they call her Nike. It's not. It's Nike. The president of the company has said again and again that the correct name is Nike. They don't care what you call them as long as you buy a pair. On the other hand, if you want to get proper about it, Nike. No, I was just going to mention that because I'm coming directly from an argument with a student of mine who said that he knew native speakers who called them Nikes. I told him that was completely out of the question, not an option. You call them Nikes. All right, going back to ancient Greece, talking about ancient Greece, the word for emprendedor, somebody who undertakes something, somebody who starts an initiative, emprendedor in Spanish has a very powerful, positive connotation. Undertaker, on the other hand, in English, was el
el que trabaja en los pompos funebres, right? El que prepara el cadáver. The one who prepares the corpse, the undertaker, works in funerals, in funeral parlors. Undertaker. Okay, so yes, you can imagine. To undertake is emprender, but un emprendedor is not an undertaker. In ancient Greece, the word, the same word, the equivalent word was pirates. And from pirates, do you know what we get? We get pirate, pirata. One who undertakes, one who, el que emprende, right? Es un pirata. By etymology, by etymological definition, this is the origin of the word. Okay, pirata, in the idea that he is acting for himself, that he is an outlaw, and in his effort to plunder, to break the law, he forgets about nationality. He forgets essentially who he is, and if he is caught, of course, they hang him. Now, there are all kinds of pirates, and pirates have always been with us. Remember that in the time of Julius Caesar kidnapped by pirates, and he became friends with the pirates and convinced the pirates that he too was a pirate. And when the rescate, when the ransom was paid, the pirates were absolutely sure that Julius Caesar would not come back for them. And besides, they were on the Turkish coast, and there were so many coves, so tantas calas, so many coves there, that the pirates just believed that they would be impossible to find, that Julius Caesar would never, ever be able to know where they were located. Well, he came back, and he killed them. Caesar's enemy, Pompeia, the founder of Pamplona, Pompey was in charge of eliminating pirates from the Mediterranean. And this, at that time, was something the Romans believed they were powerful enough to do. It was incredible. He was systematic. He broke down, desglosó, he broke down the Mediterranean into sections, and section by section eliminated piracy from the Mediterranean. Enormously successful. Pirate in Latin was called cursarius. This idea of el curso, that they were going the course. In any case, this cursus, this cursarius, this Latin word, is the word that they decided to use when they wanted to make piracy official. Piracy came back, especially, well, when there were fighting the Mediterranean and in North Africa. North Africa, they were sequestrando, they were kidnapping many, many people from the coast, from the Mediterranean coast, from Christian countries, and using them as slaves in North Africa. They say that perhaps a million, as many as a million, being used as slaves in North Africa. Everybody knows, of course, the case of Cervantes, who spent 10 years of his life before he was ransomed. Remember, rescate, pagar un rescate, to ransom. Now, there were also about a million North Africans who had been kidnapped, sold as slaves, and were working in northern Mediterranean countries, in Christian countries. In any case, when these private ships wanted public authorization to hurt the enemy, they resorted to the Latin word cusarius, and they talked about the patente de corso, and yes, they were called corsairs, corsarios. These were principally North Africans or working against North Africa. So, in English, corsair is usually referred to for in the Mediterranean. However, in English, also corsair was also the name that we gave to the pirates acting out of San Malo. San Malo, if I remember correctly, Brittany, San Malo, a very, very beautiful town with a wall around it, located on the coast, naturally, and a great seaport in its day. San Malo and the people who left San Malo, they were called Malouins in French, and in Spanish they were called Malvinas. So, las Islas Malvinas were originally settled, originally colonized by people from San Malo. The pirates from San Malo, in English, were called corsairs. That's, we have, in Spanish, corsario. Corsario is practically any pirate working under with a patente de corso. However, the word for that in English is a letter of marque. And the English word for corsario is privateer. So yes, Francis Drake, who was later made Sir Francis Drake, he was one of the first privateers. Henry Morgan, who I'm going to speak about later, was a privateer. So yes, corsario is not a privateer. A privateer is a pirate, but a very special kind of pirate. And remember that privateers, usually because they had this authorization, they had this letter of marque, they sometimes did piracy for the government, and usually for themselves. There was a lot of abuse, in the letters of marque. Now, specifically in the Caribbean, there was a certain type of pirate who lived off the land, usually with the natives, who were much closer to the land, much closer to this French idea of going native. The French, when they hunt wild animals, this was called a bouquin. The people who smoke meat, that was called boucanage. And from there, we get buccaneers. Buccaneers were, yes, the kind that lived in the Caribbean specifically. And, yes, these are buccaneers. Buccaneers were pirates. They could be privateers or not. And then finally, the word, the Dutch word, freebooter, we call them freebooters. And the booty is el botín. And they are free to take the booty themselves. They elect their own captains, and it's much more democratic. However, freebooters were not as, they didn't have the same status as maybe buccaneers. Freebooters were, they were usually not very good as pirates. They had to use cabotaje, right? They had to use line of sight navigation because they weren't very good as sailors. They were thieves on a boat. Let's put it that way. Freebooters. And that came into our language, well, your language, as filibusteros, right? There was a French sort of version of the Dutch word, freebooter, and then the Spanish added the S, and so filibustero. Somebody who tries to sabotage the parliamentary process, we call that in English a filibuster. Somebody who goes up in the Senate or the Congress and speaks for a long, long time, hoping that this is going to sabotage the proposta ley, right? The proposta de ley, the bill. We call that a filibuster. But that came from much later. That came from after the American independence, this idea of sabotage. Any filibustero was somebody who wanted to sabotage the process. Okay, so we've got privateer. We've got pirate, of course. We've got freebooter, buccaneer, and corsair. Each one of them is very different. I have to take a short break now. I'll be back in just a minute.
Ahora calienta un poco de aceite de girasol. That's it. Heat a little bit of sunflower oil in a frying pan, en una sartén. What if you don't have sunflower oil? Si no tienes aceite de girasol, puedes usar bien mantequilla o ghee. Una grasa clarificada muy habitual en la cocina asiática. If you want to use olive oil, we recommend that you use a mild one.
Con Let's Cook te va a quedar un inglés rico, rico. Let's Cook es un libro de recetas para que aprendas inglés cocinando. Hemos mezclado muy bien la gramática con el vocabulario y las expresiones culinarias. Lo hemos dejado macerar durante el tiempo justo y lo hemos horneado con unos cuantos ejercicios y una buena ración de términos especializados sobre cocina. Ahora le ponemos un poco de audio para que aprendas a pronunciar todo lo que lees y listo. Ya tienes Let's Cook en cualquiera de nuestras tiendas Vaughan o en vaughantienda.com. Consíguelo antes de que se enfríe.
Hello, I'm your Vaughan telephone class teacher. How are you doing?
¿Quieres que un profesor Vaughan llame a tus trabajadores? Con horarios flexibles y la posibilidad de cancelar o reservar cualquier sesión dentro de la misma semana. Elige el tema de conversación que tú quieras. Una conversación telefónica con un angloparlante con el ingrediente clave del método Vaughan para empresas. Consulta condiciones en el 91-133-5831. 91-133-5831.
Are you ready to start the class?
Este verano es el momento perfecto para que tu empresa se ponga a tono con el inglés. Los cursos semanales de 20 horas Impact en empresas son la respuesta. Pero escucha, ahora os lo ponemos más fácil. Nuestros profesores Vaughan se trasladarán a vuestras instalaciones para que podáis realizar estos cursos intensivos en vuestras oficinas. Más información en el teléfono 91-133-5831. 91-133-5831.
Welcome back. Now, I was speaking about the different kinds of pirates there were, and I'm going to talk now about the greatest pirate there was, the worst, the most bloodthirsty. His name was Morgan. His name was Henry Morgan, and he was born in Wales, País de Gales. He was exceptionally cruel, exceptionally bloodthirsty, and there was no law for him. At the same time, yes, he was considered an asset to the British government, and he was given his letter of marque. In fact, in later life, he was named Sir. So, Sir Henry Morgan, a privateer, but again, a freebooter. One thing about the freebooters is that the men were free to take the booty, and they were free to elect their captain. Now, let's start in the biggest raid, the biggest movement, the biggest pirate expedition that ever was. We're talking about 2,000 men. 2,000 men on 37 boats. It had never been seen before. It has never been seen since. And Henry Morgan got all of these people together, his personal charisma and his connections. He was very well connected in Jamaica. Remember that Jamaica, settled by Spain, but practically unattended, very, very lightly guarded. And so when the English decided to take Jamaica, the Spanish just abandoned it. What they did is they took all their slaves, and they told their slaves to run into the mountains, and they freed their slaves, naturally, in extremis, but they freed their slaves, the cimarrones, and told the slaves to go up into the mountains and make life difficult for the English. The cimarrones became the Maroons, and the Maroons, they did. They lived up in the mountains, and they tried to sabotage the effort to transform Jamaica into the source of British sugar, because it wasn't gold. It wasn't gold that made America, the American economy, big. It was sugar, and the plantations necessary to create sugar. In any case, and Jamaica, English, at one point, the governor of Jamaica was best friends with Henry Morgan, even though he knew that Henry Morgan was not playing by the rules. Now, next to La Española, in the part, we call it Hispaniola, the island of Hispaniola, next to the island of Hispaniola in what is today Haiti, what is today Haiti, there's a little island called Tortuga, La Isla de Tortuga. It was Tortuga Island, not Turtle Island, but Tortuga Island. Tortuga Island was, for some reason, untouchable. It was exempt. The Spaniards couldn't take it. It's supposedly in their jurisdiction, but enforced and well guarded. The English were there first. A huge French invasion came, and so it was cosmopolitan for a while, English and French. And it was probably from Tortuga Island where this flotilla of 37 pirate ships, one of them enormous, one of them with guns and really, really big, they set sail, zarparon, they set sail. They were heading west to the mainland, what they used to call the Spanish Main. That's what we call it in English, to the Spanish Main. But Morgan would not tell them where they were going. And they got closer and closer to Panama, and Morgan still didn't tell them. Here they were in Panama, very near where the canal is today. And finally, Morgan told them that the prize they were going to take was Panama City. I'll be back in a couple of minutes.
¿Eres de los que en verano, cuando llega el calor, dices hot o heat? Si has pensado hot o aún no tienes la respuesta, necesitas mejorar tu inglés. Pero tranquilo, este verano, when the heat comes, tienes una gran oportunidad para conseguirlo. Apúntate a los cursos intensivos de inglés de Vaughan. Descubre la eficacia de un método que te reta y te sorprende, y con el que sí es posible mejorar tu inglés en poco tiempo. Llama al 91-133-5833 o entra en grupovaughan.com. Do you Vaughan?
¿Vas a dejar pasar el verano otra vez sin hacer nada con tu inglés? Vente a Vaughan. Con nuestros Summer Impacts refrescarás tu inglés con los mejores profesores. Este verano, hazte un Summer Impacts, un curso intensivo con clases concentradísimas y muy, muy refrescantes. Summer Impacts. Más información en el 91-133-5833 o en grupovaughan.com.
Apúntate a los cursos intensivos de inglés de Vaughan. Descubre la eficacia de un método que te reta y te sorprende y con el que sí es posible mejorar tu inglés en poco tiempo. Eso sí, tendrás que esforzarte. Entra en grupovaughan.com. ¿Do you Vaughan?
Con Let's Cook te va a quedar un inglés rico, rico. Ya tienes Let's Cook en cualquiera de nuestras tiendas Vaughan o en vaughantienda.com. Consíguelo antes de que se enfríe.
Este verano es el momento perfecto para que tu empresa se ponga a tono con el inglés. Los cursos semanales de 20 horas Impact en empresas son la respuesta. Pero escucha, ahora os lo ponemos más fácil. Nuestros profesores Vaughan se trasladarán a vuestras instalaciones para que podáis realizar estos cursos intensivos en vuestras oficinas. Más información en el teléfono 91-133-5831. 91-133-5831.
Welcome back. This is Western Civilization, from Mesopotamia to Silicon Valley. And on tonight's program, I have been talking about piratas, I've been talking about pirates, and right now I'm talking about one of the greatest pirates of all time, Henry Morgan, soon to be Sir Henry Morgan, and how in the greatest pirate expedition of all time, 37 boats, 2,000 men, all under the charismatic leadership of Henry Morgan. They have reached the coast of Panama, and he has told them that their prize is going to be Panama City. And I can't imagine what they thought, because Panama City, oh yes, Panama City, at the time, 7,000 houses, and nice houses, we're talking about nice houses, we're talking about houses, many of them made of stone. Very wealthy people, yes, strongly built and strongly defended. Walls surrounding the city, well guarded. We're talking about many, many soldiers. And fully protected, fully, fully protected. Of course, 2,000 pirates, that isn't a small number. We're not talking about, we are talking about exceptional people here, going to kill or to die. But, okay, the location. Panama City is located on the other side, on the Pacific side of the Isthmus of Panama. They're going to have to go up and over, just like, I don't know, just like Balboa had done, Vasquez de Balboa had done 122 years earlier. It was time for them. And by the way, Francis Drake, one of the great pirates, Francis Drake, 100 years earlier, he'd heard about the Pacific, and some say that que tenía la bitácora de Magallanes, that he was carrying Magellan's logbook, and he knew about the Pacific. In any case, he went up and looked over onto the Pacific, but didn't cross. So, yes, these are going to be maybe the first Englishmen, but, of course, there were people from all over the place, French and Dutch. Remember that entire area between the Orinoco River and the Amazon River, all of that at the time was called Guiana. And there was going to be
an English part, there was going to be a French part, and there was going to be a Dutch part. And yes, the Dutch part today is called Suriname. Guyana or Guyana, that's where we get cayenne pepper. The cayenne pepper, the really hot, spicy pepper, that comes from Guyana. That comes from the French part. Now, all of that area, Guyana, that was pretty much open territory. The Spanish couldn't guard it, and because the Brazilian side was Portuguese, and because Portugal had been part of Spain, it was part of Spain from 1580 until about 1640, when it de facto left Spain. The whole thing, de jure, it was recognized as independent, I think, in the 1660s, but it left Spain in 1640, and it always complained during those 60 years. Portugal kept complaining that Spain was not looking after Portuguese territory and allowing the Dutch to land there, and the French, and the English. So yes, Guyana was open. But they weren't going to Guyana. They were going to cross Panama, cross the Isthmus of Panama, go to the other side, and take this exceptionally well-guarded city with city walls. Panama City, naturally, the galleons were coming from the Pacific, from Manila. The galleons with gold and so forth, and that was one of the reasons that Panama City was prosperous. But the big reason that Panama City was prosperous was it was a slave emporium. Peru and Chile needed slaves, and this was the transshipment point. So you had lots and lots of Indians and African slaves in Panama City. And as I say, 7,000 houses. There were 2,000 mules, mulas, there for the transportation of gold and silver over the isthmus and its transshipment to Spain. There was all kinds of wealth, all kinds of ostentation, opulence, and it was a perfect place for pirates to attack. Now, the strongest place there on the Chagres River, that's where they were, the Chagres, the strongest place there, there was a fort. And so four ships and 400 men were sent against this fort. And the walls of the fort were only palisades, right? Palisadas, empalizadas. They were the palisades, wooden palisades, easy to burn. So taking this fort was relatively easy. And when the rest of the pirates saw that the British flag was flying there, they decided, by the way, for some reason, many of the ships in the harbor there, they were carrying casks of wine, probably vino de Jerez, which was the main kind of wine arriving at that time. And they decided to drink that wine. At this point, they got so drunk that four of the ships crashed into the rocks. The pirates, they couldn't control themselves. And this is going to be a constant later on, this sort of lack of discipline. This is what you get with freebooters who in no way are professional. In any case, so there were prisoners in the prison, in the fort. And those prisoners were offered their liberty if they would escort the pirates over onto the other side of the isthmus. So, they did. That was exactly what they did. By the way, one of the ships that crashed was the captain's ship, Henry Morgan's ship, the big ship. It was useless now because it went out of control when they got too drunk after seeing the success of the raid, of the attack on the fort. Now, 1,300 men were selected to attack Panama City. Again, extremely risky. 400 left to guard the Caribbean side against any attack, and 150 to look for Spanish ships in the area and to try and take gold or whatever was available from them, simply to be pirates. So, they decided to go light. They decided that other people can make this journey in a short time, like 10 days, so that they really wouldn't need that much food. This was a horrendous mistake. Almost immediately, there were no provisions. There was nothing that they could use, nothing that they could eat. In addition to which, the Spanish had seen them coming. The Spanish knew exactly where they were at every moment. The Spanish were very careful about eliminating any source of food that these people might encounter. They got to the town of Cedro Bueno, and clearly a lumber town, Cedro Bueno, where they expected to find food. And now, because there was no food and they were getting hungry, they started moving more slowly. And because they were at a high elevation, it was cold. They hadn't counted on that. It was really cold. They were in imminent danger of dying of hunger, which we in English, that's called to starve. To starve. To starve is you're so hungry, you have no food, and you die. To starve, to die of hunger. They were in danger of starving, and of course, they were eating anything they could cut with their machete, anything they could kill, naturally, but, they had canoes. They were carrying their canoes on the top of their head, but still, they couldn't use them. Now, anyone else would have gone back. Anyone else would have despaired. But again, maybe it's the numbers, the sheer numbers, 1,300 men. They didn't go back. The little food they could find, Morgan made sure that it went to the weaker members of the group, the sick ones. And this gave him the aura of leadership that, well, until that time, he had been lacking. The men were much more disciplined after that and ready to follow him because of his example. Now, you can imagine their joy. They went into one town where they didn't find any food, but they did find dogs and cats, and that was enough to live on. Finally, Finally, they found a place, like un prado, a meadow, a flat spot, where they could see the Pacific. And below them, there were cows, herds of cows, and ganado, cattle, and horses, and burros, right, asses. The cowboys ran away immediately on seeing these people. You can imagine what hunger does. The men, or I don't know, the condition of being a pirate, the men went down and, without waiting, cut up these animals and began to eat them without cooking. Began, this was an enormous carnage, and I imagine it looked spectacular. Very bloody. But yes, that's what they did. They devoured the... we distinguish in English between meat, which is for preparing, and flesh, which is alive. So meat is carne muerta, carne para comer. That's meat in English. And flesh is carne viva. And so they were eating flesh. Now, this good luck is what was able to sustain them. And they made their way. The Spaniards, of course, knew exactly where they were at that point. The cowboys had informed the local garrison, and so there were about 50 men on horseback, right, montados, 50 men on horseback, that's how we say it, looking at their every move, and there were people behind them to stop any possible retreat, any possible withdrawal, retirada. So, the city. They, before they got to the city, the Spaniards had prepared a battle for them. There was a flat area, very apt for the traditional kind of battle, which, of course, Spanish forces would be good at, right? When you have a disciplined army against an undisciplined army, it's much better for the undisciplined army to use the tactics of the guerrilla, to use guerrilla tactics, whereas the disciplined army, they want a what we call a pitched battle, a set battle. Well, in this case, there was a surprise. Because in addition to troops, there was cattle, ganado, lots and lots of cattle. And the men, the cowboys, started a stampede of cows against the pirates. And so all you could see were horns, los cuernos, no? And dust, el polvo. All you could see was that. They were coming and getting closer. And I'm going to take a break now. I'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Hace unos años, Richard Vaughan llegó a España y se propuso cambiar ese problemilla que teníamos con el inglés, desarrollando un método innovador para que aprendiéramos en condiciones. Un sueño por el que cientos de personas han trabajado junto a Richard durante 40 años con ilusión.
40 años de trabajo, en los que hemos tenido la suerte de contar con la entrega de grandes profesionales y con miles de estudiantes que se han esforzado junto a ellos. 40 años contando con el talento de unos profesores únicos. 40 años de ideas, de ilusión, de innovación, de enseñanza diferente. Gracias por formar parte de Baugan. Este verano es el momento perfecto para que tu empresa se ponga a tono con el inglés. Los cursos semanales de 20 horas IMPACT en empresas son la respuesta. Pero escucha, ahora os lo ponemos más fácil. Nuestros profesores Baugan se trasladarán a vuestras instalaciones para que podáis realizar estos cursos intensivos en vuestras oficinas. Más información en el teléfono 91-133-5831. 91-133-5831.
Tus hijos no saben que les encanta el inglés hasta que los traigas a Baugan. Este verano tus hijos van a descubrir que el inglés es su asignatura favorita gracias a los cursos intensivos de nuestra línea junior. ¿Por qué? Porque nuestras clases no son clases de academia al uso, nada de ejercicios aburridos. Las clases de Baugan para niños son clases divertidas en las que hablan inglés todo el rato y además lo pasan de maravilla. Este verano apúntales a unas clases de inglés que les encantarán. Apúntalo a los intensivos de Baugan Junior. Más información en el 91-133-5832 o en grupobaugan.com.
Welcome back. We had the situation where the Spanish, they had lots and lots of cows, and they thought, okay, this is something we can do. We will stampede the cows and use the cows to decimate the pirates before they're able to attack the city. However, that never works. Ever since los tiempos de Escipión, ¿no? En la batalla de Zama, al lado de Cartago, Scipio, at the Battle of Zama, right? He was able to use Hannibal's elephants against him. He was able to scare the elephants, and the elephants turned on their own side and started killing their own men. Well, evidently something like this happened, that it was so easy for the pirates to turn the cows and the bulls, fighting bulls naturally, around and to dodge them, esquivarles, and they ended up doing more damage to the Spanish side than to the pirate side. In any case, how to take the city? They avoided the main roads, making very, very slow progress, and evidently they weren't seen until they got very, very close to the city. The battle itself took 3 hours, and it was an assault, a life-or-death assault on the city walls against artillery, against, all kinds of tactics. And so, yes, many, many hundreds of pirates died, but the city was taken in 3 hours. Now, Morgan's orders, Morgan insisted that the city be burnt to the ground before they even started looking at the kinds of things they could save. Objects of art, who knows, anything, but it was all burnt to the ground. Now, they found out that the women, many of the women, were able to escape. That they were able to take things with them. Most of the gold, most of the things that most of the objects, most of the things that were worth anything, they had sailed away already on a galleon. Now, many of the pirates wanted to go in pursuit, but Morgan said no. And when the pirates decided to mutiny, and pay no attention to Morgan, he sabotaged the only ships in the harbor so that that was not going to be possible. They loaded up, by the way, the atrocities. Spanish historians still talk about the atrocities and the lack of humanity, the lack of mercy. All of them were sacrificed, killing women, killing children, under the most horrendous conditions. And time to go back. Well, gold, silver, jewels, and 600 prisoners. Now, these 600 prisoners were the wealthy ones that Morgan thought that he could get ransom. Remember, ransom, dinero de rescate. The others, the ones that didn't look like they could have, they were killed without any contemplation, without immediately, without hesitation. Now, they all went down to the Chagres, and there was a boat sent to Portobello, a neighboring town, asking for rescate. They said that they were not going to pay a thing, that he could do what he wanted, but that they were not going to pay. And, yeah, he pretty much destroyed the town of Portobello as well. On the way back from Panama, Morgan ordered that all of the jewels, all of the gold, all of it be put in a common pile, and the pile was going to be shared, which none of the other pirates really believed. In any case, yes. He ordered that all of the men be searched, intimately searched, and that anything they were carrying on their person, any of the booty, el botín, that it go into the common pot. So they did that. And, well, when none of the men had any more, when it was all there, at one point, what Morgan did was to take as much as he could and run away and abandon his men. So, yes, he was a pirate among pirates. There was no honor among pirates. Morgan, you can imagine, there was hostility. There was talk of mutiny. Remember, these were freebooters. They had the right, theoretically, to name their own leader. But, yeah, Morgan ran away. Morgan ran away. And, he made it to Jamaica, where he was best friends with the governor. The governor decided to protect him. The English crown didn't like what he had done and gave orders that he should be punished. But no, he was too well-connected in Jamaica and lived in Jamaica and allowed to enjoy the money. Yes, he was given the honor of knighthood. He was made a knight. So, that was it. That was his that was his big swan song. That was the end of his career. And, that's the end of this program. I will be speaking more about pirates on Wednesday.